Hi, I'm David Walker and welcome to the Brain Tumor Podcast. If you haven't listened to one of these podcasts before, the aim is to educate and inform. It's to provide much needed information for those wishing to find out more about brain tumors. Please, if you like the show, leave us a good rating. In that way, more people get to hear about us and therefore more people will be potentially helped by the information in the podcast. Now, on to today's episode. Hi, this is David Walker with another episode of the Brain Tumor Podcast. And today I want to talk about some of the common non-chemotherapy medications that are used in the management of patients with brain tumors. I think it's important because almost everyone, particularly those who have a glioma, but basically, everyone who has brain tumour surgery is on some form of non-chemotherapy medication at the time of their surgery and for some time after surgery. So I think it's an important part of the management. It's an important thing to understand as a patient and as a family member or a carer for patients with brain tumours. So the chemotherapy, or not the chemotherapy, the drug agents that I'm going to talk about are dexamethasone, for one, some anti-seizure medications, and then some other medications that are used in management of symptoms such as analgesics and anti-nausea agents. So first, dexamethasone, or Decadron, that's more commonly used term in North America. But dexamethasone is a corticosteroid. It's a drug that mimics the body's natural hormone cortisol produced by the adrenal gland. And these steroids are commonly given in not just brain tumor patients, but many other scenarios that where there's an aim to reduce or prevent inflammation. And for a brain tumor patient, that aim is to reduce and prevent inflammation around a brain tumour. As I've indicated previously, brain tumours can cause a lot of swelling in the brain and or edema. And when dexamethasone is used as an anti-inflammatory agent in this context, it does reduce the edema or inflammation around a brain tumour and significantly helps symptoms. So taking dexamethasone in a patient with a brain tumor does reduce the pressure feeling and reduces headaches and other pressure type symptoms, but also reduces neurological deficits associated with swelling or inflammation around a brain tumor. The dexamethasone is usually commenced before surgery, so that it's at diagnosis, and it usually results in a dramatic improvement in symptoms within hours of introduction. If it's not started days before brain tumour surgery, it can be used at the time of surgery and is often continued for several days at least afterwards. It just again helps the swelling associated with a brain tumour operation. But dexamethasone is also very useful during periods of radiation therapy because swelling is often induced by radiation, and it can reduce this. And so dexamethasone can reduce the symptoms associated with radiation therapy. And it also is very useful along the way when symptoms recur at periods after brain tumor treatment. It can be very useful for controlling symptoms such as a headache and other type pressure symptoms. But it does have side effects. So let's talk a bit about those. Some of the common ones are gastritis type symptoms because it causes inflammation in the gastric lining. Other things that often occur are changes in diet and eating patterns. So patients on dexamethasone often have an increased appetite and can put on weight, which is not very desirable in most circumstances. but also dexamethasone commonly disturbs sleep. So it's very difficult to get to sleep and stay asleep, and there's, the sleep is disturbed. So often we can tailor dosing dexamethasone to help with that. So the higher dose is given in the morning, for instance. And another common problem associated with dexamethasone is glucose intolerance. So the patients that are diabetic already have their sugars go out of whack significantly. People that are on the borderline for diabetes, they may even push them, may be pushed into a true diabetic state. And it's certainly an important consideration in patients on treatment for diabetes, so that may have to be addressed. Those side effects can be managed, but it can be difficult as well. So dexamethasone is a very useful medication, but there are some undesirable effects. And as a general rule, it's better to use dexamethasone when and only needed, but not to withhold the medication if it actually is going to be useful. Another thing about dexamethasone is that it often needs to be withdrawn slowly. So that particularly a person who's been on a high dose of dexamethasone for a long period of time, you can't just stop that medication. And the reason is because dexamethasone will cause a suppression of the normal secretion or production of cortisol in the body. So, and cortisol is a very, very important stress response hormone in the body, so that if you suddenly stop dexamethasone after taking it for a long period of time at high dose, then there can be sort of a real sudden drop off in the body's production of cortisol, and that can be very unhelpful. Having said that, in fact, that is a rare situation, and a person who's on dexamethasone just for a few weeks even almost certainly is not going to have that effect if dexamethasone is stopped pretty suddenly. But nonetheless, we tend to reduce dexamethasone slowly. What are the typical doses that we use? Well, in the initial presentation, in our group, many of my colleagues and myself would usually start a person on 4 milligrams of dexamethasone 3 or 4 times a day with meals or with food. And then soon after surgery, start to reduce that pretty quickly and stop it if we possibly can. Dexamethasone can be given orally or intravenously. So either route can be given. Obviously, orally is a more appropriate way of giving it if it's at all possible. So that's all about dexamethasone, or the most important things about dexamethasone. An important drug that certainly has significant side effects. One other side effect I'll mention that people don't really like, but it's very common, is the presence of acne. And all of these side effects reproduce a condition called Cushing's syndrome or Cushing's disease. Cushing's disease strictly is a subset of Cushing's syndrome patients. But so dexamethasone will cause Cushing-like symptoms. I think I've talked about that in this section on pituitary tumours. Now, anti-seizure medications. Well, it used to be that everyone who was going to have a brain tumour operation would be given anti-seizure medication as a routine. It's more and more recognised that now that is not necessary, but still anti-seizure medications are very important in the management of many brain tumour patients. As I've previously mentioned in other episodes, that one of the common presenting features of a patient with a brain tumour is a seizure. And obviously we don't want that to happen again, or we want to try to reduce the chance of that happening again. So anti-seizure medications are very important in that circumstance. Although there's very little evidence to support it, there's still a thought amongst the neurosurgical community that if a person is at a high chance, or even if they're just having routine brain surgery for a tumour, they will give that patient anti-seizure medication to reduce the chance of a seizure happening in the post-operative, post-surgery period. Actually, the evidence is not there to support that approach, but I still can understand to a degree that approach being used. I certainly don't do it anymore. I used to. That was my training. But there seems to be no benefit in using that approach. It doesn't tend to reduce the long-term incidence of seizures in brain tumor patients. It might reduce the chance of seizures in the first few days, possibly, but that's not proven. And anti-seizure medications have side effects, so I tend to avoid that approach. But it's certainly critical if a person has had a seizure, whether it be before surgery or in the period after surgery. They are effective, but they don't absolutely prevent seizures happening. They just reduce the chance of them happening. Now, the commonest, there are dozens and dozens of medications they use for seizure control. There are a few common ones, previously phenytoin or Dilantin, others like Tegretol or sodium valproate. But the go-to drug, I think, these days is Keppra, which is commonly used name. Levetiracetam is the generic name, but obviously Keppra is easier to say, so I'll just stick with that for the time being. Keppra is a very effective anti-seizure medication, anticonvulsant, that is, and with relatively low side effect profile compared to those earlier medications. Keppra hasn't been around as long as Dilantin and Tegretol. It still has been around for some years now, but it's generally considered a second or, in some classifications, third generation anticonvulsant. A typical dose for an adult is about 1,000 milligrams a day, usually given in twice daily dosings, that is 500 milligrams twice a day. The dose can be increased every week or so if seizures are still happening, but the maximum dose is generally around the 3,000 milligrams a day mark. I tend to give an initial dose of 1,000 to 2,000 possibly if a person's a large person. Initially is a bolus dose, can be given intravenously or orally, and then slip back to the 500 milligrams a day, twice a day as a standard therapy. The length of anticonvulsant treatment is controversial, but if a person is presented with a seizure, I would tend to, and most of my colleagues would tend to, continue that medication for the foreseeable future. That is for some months at least after surgery, and then I would get a neurologist involved in the management and decision making about dosing and length of medication. It often comes down to the fact that even if a person hasn't had a seizure after their initial presentation, those people want to get back to driving. So if they have to stop their anti-seizure medication, then they'll often have to sit out driving for 6 to 12 months off medication. So if they can remain on medication and remain seizure-free, then they can get back to driving earlier. So that's often the consideration in that respect in terms of length of treatment required. Side effects can occur, and they're not uncommon. The sort of things that can happen with Keppra are drowsiness, just a feeling of unwellness, headaches, some abnormal sort of psychological effects as well, in apathy and depression at times. But overall, it's a pretty safe and effective and well-tolerated drug. Now, there's some other medications I want to talk about. Firstly, analgesia. People often have headaches before surgery, after surgery, and at times afterwards. after treatment, after recovery from surgery. So simple analgesics like non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medications and Panadol, and even oral narcotic analgesics can be used in the period before surgery and the perioperative period if a person's headaches are difficult to control. I tend to try to limit narcotic medications because they do have significant side effects, not only nausea and constipation and things like that, but they can, at higher doses, cause drowsiness, and then that can muddy the waters in terms of clinical examination and patient's recovery, etc. So I would tend to stick with simple analgesics if at all possible, such as Panadol or Nurofen or Mobic or things like that. Now, another big group of medications that we use, that are used in brain tumour patients, are anti-nausea medications. And that's particularly in the period for during treatment for during the chemotherapy and radiation stages. But nausea and vomiting and things can also be a side effect of dexamethasone, as I mentioned above. So there are plenty of medications that are used in that context. Maxilon, Stemetol are common ones, as well as Ondansetron. Ondansetron's the go-to medication, I think, because it can be used in different forms. It's very effective. It can be just orally or sublingually. There's wafers that can be given, and I find them very useful in acute nausea associated with medications, including chemotherapy. So we've talked today about the non-chemotherapy medications used in brain tumour patients, particularly dexamethasone, anti-seizure medications, analgesics and anti-nausea agents. I hope that's been helpful. Again, I really thank you for your support and feedback. It's been overwhelming. I apologise, I haven't had an episode for a few weeks, but I've just had various things going on, and I think I've covered many of the common and subjects that people want to find out about. But if you really want to find out know about some other particular subject, let me know. I'll probably be starting to rehash and rework some of the earlier episodes because they are the really go-to episodes. And of course, if there's always some improvements that can be made. So thanks again. Have a great day. The information in this podcast is general in nature, and it's not a substitute for the medical advice that you get from your own doctors. I'm not able to provide specific information or advice relating to your condition or anyone's individual condition in this podcast. But if you do have suggestions or feedback, please let me know and send me an email at professordavidwalker@brisbrain.com.au. That's all small case, professordavidwalker@brisbrain.com.au. Thanks very much. Have a great day.